Now, on BBC Radio 4, it's time for part two of our classic serial. Set in pre-war Europe, it's the tale of an Englishman's growing obsession with the life and death of a notorious international criminal.
Demetrios Makropoulos was a violent man, and he met a violent end. Stabbed and thrown in the Bosphorus, he went to his grave unmourned and should have been forgotten. So varied were his crimes, however, and so strange was his career, that I decided, in the autumn of 1938, to find out more about him. What began in Istanbul as little more than an academic inquiry had, by the time I reached Geneva, transformed itself into an obsession. And an obsession, as I was about to discover, can be a dangerous thing.
The Mask of Demetrios by Eric Ambler. Dramatized for radio by Stephen Sheridan. Episode 2, The House of the Eight Angels.
I had been persuaded to visit Geneva by Mr. Peters. A large man with a larger personality, he'd written me a letter of introduction to Vladislav Grodek, a retired spymaster for whom Demetrios had once worked. 3 days had passed since I'd sent it, however, and as I sat picking unenthusiastically at a grapefruit in the dining room of my hotel, I wondered if I'd ever hear back.
Excuse me, Mr. Latimer, I'm sorry to bother you.
I looked up as the hotel manager approached my table.
The Morning Post has just arrived and this came for you.
Thank you.
I took it from him and tore open the envelope. At last, I had my reply.
My dear Mr. Latimer,
Grodek's letter began.
Please join me for luncheon at my villa tomorrow. Unless I hear to the contrary, my chauffeur will collect you at 11 o'clock.
Espionage was clearly a lucrative business. The car which brought me to Grodek's villa must have cost many times my annual income, and the study into which I was shown by his housekeeper was the size of a small church.
Make yourself comfortable, Mr. Latimer.
Thank you.
I'm sure Herr Grodek won't be long.
I was about to settle into one of the armchairs by the fire when a Siamese cat jumped onto the back and stared at me with hostile blue eyes. It was immediately joined by another whose expression was no less unfriendly.
I see you've met Antoine and Simone.
I turned around as Grodek entered the room.
Delightful lunch, mes enfants.
And so much more intelligent than most of the people I know.
In his carpet slippers and baggy tweeds, there was more of the retired bank manager about him than the retired spy.
I'm afraid the autumn weather makes them ill-tempered, though. Do you like English whiskey?
Very much.
Good. I, too, prefer it as an aperitif.
I'm not sure if Mr. Peters explained the purpose of my visit in his letter of introduction. I didn't read it myself because first...
Because it was written in Polish, and I don't suppose you're familiar with my native tongue. Your health, Mr. Latimer.
And yours.
He said you wanted to know about my work with Demetrios in Belgrade. Is that correct?
Yes.
He also said that you were a writer of detective stories. That would explain your interest in Demetrios, I suppose. But something bothers me.
Oh?
Peters is a clever man, but mercenary. He wouldn't send you to me unless he thought he could benefit from it in some way. Would you care to describe to me the nature of your relationship?
I only wish I could. But I'm not sure I really understand it myself.
Please, monsieur, I'm not joking.
Neither am I. We first came across each other whilst I was conducting my investigations in Athens. He then followed me to Sofia, where he questioned me at gunpoint.
At gunpoint?
Yes. He followed this up with an offer. He said that if I would meet him in Paris and collaborate with him in some scheme he had in mind, we would both profit to the extent of 500,000 francs. He claimed I was in possession of a very valuable piece of information.
Did you believe him?
Not at first. That's when he gave me your address as a token of goodwill. He told me you could help with my research.
I don't wish to seem too inquisitive, monsieur, but what is the valuable piece of information you possess?
I don't know.
Oh, come now. If you want me to confide in you, then surely you can return the compliment.
I'm telling you the truth, Herr Grodek. I don't know. Peters and I talked together fairly freely. Then, at a particular point in the conversation, he began to grow excited.
At what point?
It was when I explained to him how I knew that Demetrius was penniless when he died.
I see. And how did you know?
I saw his body in Istanbul. All his worldly goods had been piled up alongside him on the mortuary table, and they comprised nothing more than a tatty set of old clothing.
Thank you, Mr. Latimer. That is very helpful.
Grodek stared at me for several seconds. Then he walked to the drinks cabinet and poured us two more whiskies. To my surprise, I saw he was laughing.
Oh, forgive me, but it was the thought of Peters holding you at gunpoint. He's quite terrified of firearms, you know.
He managed to keep his fears to himself most successfully.
Oh, dear, I'm afraid I've upset you, but don't be downhearted.
He clapped me on the shoulder. He suddenly seemed in excellent spirits.
After we've eaten, I'll tell you all about Demetrius and the trouble he caused me in 1926. But first, may I be permitted to offer you a word of advice?
Please do.
If I were you, I'd be inclined to take our friend Peters at his word and go to Paris. I've a feeling it may prove very much to your advantage.
After an excellent luncheon, we returned to the study. Grodek poured us two more whiskies and began to talk.
Espionage can be challenging work. If I were to ask you to acquire a chart showing the positions of Yugoslavia's coastal minefields, where would you start?
Was that your mission in 1926?
Yes. The Italian government hired me to obtain a copy in case tensions between the two countries increased.
I'm not sure where I'd start, but then I'm not a spy.
Within a week of setting up house in Belgrade, I'd managed to discover that the chart was being held under lock and key at the Ministry of Marine.
So what did you do? Break in and copy it?
I see you favor the direct approach. But no, Mr. Latimer. If the Yugoslavs had any reason to suspect their chart had been examined, they would simply have repositioned their mines.
I blushed a little at my own naivety.
Thanks to Demetrius. They found out anyway. But I shall come to that part of my story by and by.
How did you obtain a copy of the chart, then?
The answer is simple, Mr. Latimer. I didn't.
Oh?
I let someone else obtain it for me.
I'm not sure I follow, Herr Grodek.
I kept a close eye on the Ministry of Marine, watching the comings and goings of its staff. I was looking for a very particular type of person, and on the third day, I found him. Shabby, middle-aged, careworn, he was perfect. Absolutely perfect.
A brandy, please. Just a small one. My wife's cut my allowance.
He was in the habit of visiting the Café Milosha after work for a drink, and I learned from the other customers that he was a junior clerk. It must have been humiliating at his age still to hold so lowly a position, and I saw the failure in his eyes when I approached him one evening and asked for a light.
Oh, I see you favor cigars, monsieur. I also prefer them to cigarettes.
Oh, these are from Cuba. Would you like one?
Oh, thank you, monsieur. And Bulic, by the way. Walter Bulic.
During the next few days, I often drank with Herr Bulic, and sometimes I allowed him to beat me at cards. When he asked me what I did for a living, I told him I was a representative of a German optical company.
Well, that must be interesting work. But what, may I ask, brings you to Belgrade?
My company has submitted a quotation for binoculars to the Ministry of Marine. Oh, I expect you know that already, though. I hear you're one of their most important men.
Really, monsieur? You flatter me.
Not at all. In fact, now I come to think of it...
Yes?
No. Forget I even spoke.
No. Please, monsieur, tell me.
It's nothing, really. But my company could do with a friend at court... If you were to use your influence to help us to secure the contract I mentioned, we'd be more than happy to cover your expenses. Would 20,000 dinar be enough?
20,000 dinar?
He thought it over. He knew, of course, that as a lowly clerk he had no influence whatsoever, but he also knew that he could easily take the credit if, by some chance, my company should win the contract anyway.
You understand, of course, that I can't make any promises.
I saw at once that my fish was caught.
But as you've been so very kind, I'll see what I can do.
Thank you, Herr Bulich. That's all I ask. And I dare say some extra money would be useful. But
my wife has expensive tastes. And the ministry pays less well than you might imagine. Yes, monsieur, some extra money would be very useful indeed.
A week later, the contract was awarded to a Czech firm. Bulich stopped coming to the cafe for a few days, and when I saw him again, he looked awkward and uncomfortable.
I'm sorry, monsieur. I assure you, I did my best.
What are you talking about? I couldn't be happier with the outcome. Here's the 20,000 dinar I promised you.
I don't understand. Surely your company lost the contract.
Lost it? Didn't I explain? We submitted our quotation through one of our Czech subsidiaries.
You mean... Oh, but that is wonderful.
We must celebrate. I know a splendid place just around the corner. Go home and change and meet me there in an hour. And make sure you bring your excellent wife.
This champagne is delicious, monsieur. I love the way it tickles. May I have some more?
Oh, now, Anna. No, I think you've had too much already.
Oh, my husband is such a nuisance. He hates to see me having fun.
He's an important man. He has to consider his position.
Him? Important? I think you've had too much as well.
Look, Herr Bulich, over there.
Who is that?
A friend of mine from Germany. He's just come in. Would you have any objection to him joining us?
None whatsoever. He's rather dashing.
I beckoned him over and introduced him as the Baron von Kiesling.
It's an honor to make your acquaintance, sir.
But needless to say, he was better known by another name.
Assure you, mein Herr, the honor is mine.
Demetrius.
I take it he was always part of your plan. How did you first come to hear of him?
He was recommended by an acquaintance of mine. I can say no more than that. He was calling himself Demetrius Talat at the time and had a reputation for efficiency and discretion.
The acquaintance who recommended him, did he by any chance work for a bank called the Eurasian Credit Trust?
Yes, Mr. Latimer, he did. But how on earth...
I heard about the Eurasian Credit Trust when I was in Sofia. They hired Demetrius to assassinate a politician. But please, Herr Grodek, do carry on with your story.
After the introductions were over, Demetrius went to work in earnest. How witty Herr Bulich was, how charming his wife. They must come and stay with him at his house in Bavaria. Or would they prefer Paris or Cannes? By the time he asked Madame Bulich to dance with him, they were both entirely smitten.
The Baron is... most agreeable, monsieur. I mean, most agreeable. And clearly very wealthy.
Very? I'm told he owns no fewer than 27 companies.
What?
You'd do well to cultivate his friendship.
Really? You think so?
Bulich's eyes glazed over as he no doubt imagined himself running one of the Baron's companies, barking out orders to his put-upon staff.
Divinely, Baron von Kiesling. Thank you.
I was fortunate to have so graceful a partner.
Girl!
He called over a flower seller and bought Madame Bulich an orchid. As he opened his wallet to pay for it, a large wad of 1,000 dinar notes fell onto the table.
Oh!
You shouldn't carry so much money, my friend. It isn't safe.
I found it at Alessandro's earlier and forgot to put it away in my room. Do you know Alessandro's, madam?
Oh, I don't think so.
It's the luckiest gambling place in Belgrade. Would you care to join me there as my guest after we've dined?
We'd be delighted. Wouldn't we, Walter?
Of course we would, dear. Delighted.
Naturally, they were expected, and naturally, preparations had been made. We decided against roulette, It's too hard to cheat a man at roulette, but there were plenty of other games with which to ensnare them.
Well done, monsieur, well done.
I played first and won 2,000 dinars at 30 et 40. Demetrius played next and did even better.
I told you this was a lucky place. Would you care to play a little head bridge?
Oh, no, I'm not really sure.
Oh, go on. Don't show yourself up in front of the Baron.
I'm afraid I didn't think to bring much money with me.
That's no problem. Alessandro!
He called over the proprietor, who, I need hardly add, also worked for me.
Would it be possible to extend the line of credit to Herr Bulich? I'm more than happy to vouch for it.
All that won't be necessary, Herr Baron. I know I can always trust your friends.
Bulich borrowed 5,000 dinars and started to play. We let him win a little on couleur.
Yes!
Then took it away again on inverse.
No!
In less than an hour, all his chips had gone.
Bad luck, old man. Here, play with some of mine.
If Bulich thought the chips were a gift, he was to discover later on they were not. He played again and lost again, and hoping for a change in fortune, borrowed some more. At the end of the evening, pale and sweating, he had to sign a promissory note for 12,000 dinar.
Never mind, Herr Bulich. I dare say you'll win it all back tomorrow. And no doubt a great deal more besides.
A professional gambler knows when to cut his losses, but Bulich was not a professional. He returned the following night with the 20,000 dinar I had paid him, redeemed his promissory note to Alessandro, and spent the rest on 500 dinar chips.
A drink before you start, Herr Bulich.
No, thank you. I want to keep a clear head.
Inevitably, he lost and lost again. Then he began once more to borrow. I don't think he ever suspected he was being cheated. Why would he? But by the end of the evening, he owed 37,000 dinar more than he had in the world.
I'm sorry that the cards didn't favor you tonight, Herr Bulich. May I ask when you'll be able to pay off your debt?
Soon, Alessandro. Soon.
From then on, it was plain sailing. Bulich came to me for money the following day. With many soft words and expressions of regret, I refused him and suggested he try the Baron instead. I was hiding in an adjoining bedroom when Demetrius opened the door of his hotel suite, and I was able to hear all that followed.
Come in, Herr Bulich. You don't look well.
I did not sleep much, and my wife was on at me all day. I was just wondering.
Yes?
What would happen if I were unable to pay back Alessandro?
I hope there's no question of that. He was only willing to extend your credit on my recommendation.
I know, but... Unless you can see your way to making me a loan.
It's out of the question. You already owe me 5,000 dinar for the chips I lent you the other night.
Well, what am I to do then? I could lose my job over this, or even go to prison.
Stop panicking. I said I wouldn't make you a loan. I didn't say I wouldn't help.
Oh.
A friend of mine requires something from the Ministry of Marine. He'd be willing to pay you 50,000 dinar for it.
50,000? Well, what does he want?
The chart showing the location of Yugoslavia's coastal minefields.
So, that's your game, is it? No, Herr Baron, never. I won't work for a filthy spy.
Shut up!
Oh, no, please, no. Please don't hit me.
You've seen the chart, you know that's kept.
Well, yes, I work in the department, but I'm just a humble clerk.
So much the better. No one will have a cause to suspect you. Bring the chart here tomorrow night. You can have it back an hour later and replace it in the morning.
But the risks, Herr Baron, the risks.
There's only one risk you need worry about. And that's not doing exactly as I say.
Poor Bulich. He wasn't the kind to stand up to intimidation, and Demetrius could be very menacing. He returned the following evening with the chart folded in four under his coat. Demetrius brought it to me in the adjoining bedroom and watched as I photographed it and developed the negative.
What shall I do with him now? Pay him?
Of course. Make sure he knows what will happen, though, if he goes to the police.
I'll put the fear of God into him. Don't worry about that.
I was holding the negative up to the light when Demetrius came back.
I've come for my wages.
Oh, yes, of course. I'll fetch them from my house.
I'm not talking about those wages. I'm talking about the ones you've got in your hand.
I looked down and saw that he'd taken out a pistol.
It's not just the Italians who want a copy of that chart, you see. I've been talking to some people in France.
He jammed the pistol into my stomach and snatched away the negative.
Thank you, Herr Grodek.
He smiled at me coldly and took a step back.
As you've been so helpful, I think I'll let you live.
Demetrius didn't make many mistakes, Mr. Latimer, but he was foolish not to kill me. When I failed to locate him, I contacted the Yugoslav authorities and told them that their security had been breached.
What? After all that work?
What else could I do? It was a bitter pill to swallow, but I couldn't permit Demetrius to profit from cheating me.
And Herr Bulich? What became of him?
He was arrested and put on trial. Very wisely, he told all he knew and spared himself a firing squad. I believe he's still in prison, though.
Another ruined life. Another victim of Demetrius.
Surely there can't be much more left for you to learn about him.
No, Herr Grodek. One more piece and my jigsaw's done. I think it's time I spoke with Mr. Peters again.
I arrived in Paris on a slate-gray November morning. As my taxi crossed the bridge to the Ile de la Cité, I saw a panorama of low black clouds moving quickly in the chill, dusty wind. After I'd unpacked, I sent a pneumatique to Mr. Peters, giving him the address of my hotel. Then I typed out a letter to Marakakis, the Greek journalist I'd befriended in Sofia, telling him all that had subsequently happened. I'd finished by noon and decided to while away a few hours in the cuttings library of a local newspaper. By the time I left it, I knew a great deal more than I'd expected.
Good evening, Mr. Latimer. How very glad I am to see you again.
Mr. Peters came to my hotel room at a little after six. The last time we'd encountered each other, he'd taken me by surprise. This time I was ready for him.
I do hope Herr Grodek was of some use. He's a charming fellow, is he not? And those cats of his?
He was very helpful, Mr. Peters. Have you brought your pistol with you?
Dear me, no, Mr. Latimer. Why would I bring a pistol to a friendly meeting? And why, may I ask, are you locking the door?
I hate to seem like a bad host, but there are one or two things you should know. Firstly, I'm not by nature a violent man, but unless you tell me what you want with me, I shan't be answerable for my actions.
I see. And secondly?
Secondly, your name is not Peters. It's Peterson, and you're a Danish national. You were part of a drug smuggling gang set up by Demetrius, and in 1931 you were arrested, fined, and sent to prison.
Did Grodek tell you this?
No. I spent the afternoon in a cuttings library. I was hoping to find out more about the time Demetrius spent in Paris, but instead I saw a picture of you.
The one where I'm leaving court in handcuffs, no doubt. Not very flattering, is it?
You don't deny it, then?
Deny it? Of course not. It's true.
Very well, then, Mr. Peterson.
Please. I prefer Peters.
As you wish, Mr. Peters. When I was in Istanbul, I heard some interesting things about the end of your gang. It was said that Demetrius betrayed the lot of you by sending an incriminating dossier to the police.
That was very wrong of him, and very cruel. But I'm afraid he'd started taking his own product by then, and drug addicts have a reputation for treachery.
It was also said that several of you threatened to kill him when you left prison. Is that true?
One or two of us did, certainly. Marnus Visser, in particular, was very vocal on the subject. But then he always had been something of a hothead.
And what about you? Did you threaten to kill him too? Or did you go further?
My dear Mr. Latimer, will you please come to the point?
You were in the Levant when Demetrius was murdered.
What would you say if I accused you of committing the crime and killing him for his money?
I'd say you were being very indiscreet and very unwise. Supposing I had killed him as you suggest, I'd now have no choice but to kill you too.
He reached into his overcoat and took out his pistol.
You see, I lied about being unarmed. I wanted to know how you'd behave if you thought I was helpless.
All of which is as skillful a reply to an accusation of murder as one could wish for.
Please, Mr. Latimer.
He wearily returned his pistol to his overcoat pocket.
If you cannot be discreet, at least use your imagination. Is it likely that Demetrius would make a will in my favour? No. Then how do you suppose I could kill him for his money?
I had to concede that he had a point. His capacity for making me feel foolish was quite phenomenal.
May I suggest we try being sensible instead? Let us have dinner together, then talk business back at my apartment.
Very well. But I warn you now, unless I get a satisfactory explanation of why you brought me to Paris, I shall, 500,000 francs or not, leave by the first available train. Is that clear?
Perfectly clear, and may I say how much I appreciate your frankness. I only wish the Great One could teach us all to be so candid, so honest, so trusting of our fellow man.
Quite so.
At Mr. Peters' suggestion, and at Mr. Peters' expense, we dined at a cheap restaurant in the Rue Jacob. Then we went back to the Impasse des Huit Anges, a narrow alleyway comprising three houses, all but one of which appeared to be empty.
This way. I'm afraid my apartment is right at the top.
The stairs creaked under his weight as he began to climb. Following on behind, I was irresistibly reminded of a circus elephant reluctantly picking its way up a pyramid of coloured blocks to perform a balancing trick.
We used to use all three houses in the Impasse for storage. Strictly speaking, they belonged to Demetrius, but he took the precaution of buying them in my name.
And Monsieur Caillé?
I'm sorry?
I noticed a little brass plaque by the front door. It said that the top floor apartment was owned by a Monsieur Caillé.
How very observant of you. Monsieur Caillé doesn't exist.
Oh?
I wanted Demetrius to think I'd sold the houses. So I adopted the name of Caillé and bought them from myself.
Mr. Peters was sweating heavily by the time we reached the top floor. He stood panting for a moment outside a battered front door and fumbled in his pocket for a key.
Thought we might have some Algerian coffee. It takes longer to prepare than French, but I prefer it. Shall we go in?
Mr. Peters' apartment had all the understated elegance of a Christmas grotto. It was divided up by cheap-looking gold curtains. There were thick Moroccan rugs on the floor, a large brass gong in the corner, and two battered leather ottomans piled high with bright purple cushions.
An oasis of rest in a desert of turmoil. I do hope you like it.
Whilst Mr. Peters busied himself making coffee, I went and sat down on one of the ottomans. There were two books on the little table in front of it, an unopened copy of Plato's Symposium, and a volume of erotic poetry that looked very well thumbed. There was also a photograph.
Do you recognize the man in that picture?
Of course I do. It's Demetrius.
I keep it as a souvenir of the old days. We used to hold meetings in here, you know.
He placed the coffee percolator on a tray and brought it over with two cups and a box of cigarettes.
The Great One has bestowed upon me an excellent memory. And if I close my eyes, I can still picture us all together. Myself and Demetrius, Werner the chemist, and Marnus Visser, of course.
You mentioned Marnus Visser earlier. You said he was a hothead.
And so he was. Violent, angry, hard to control. He only died quite recently. Oh, but of course, you know about that already.
I beg your pardon. I don't know anything of the sort.
Well, that photograph you just looked at.
The one of Demetrius? What about it?
That isn't Demetrius, Mr. Latimer. It's Marnus Visser.
What are you talking about? Don't be absurd. That's the man I saw lying on a mortuary table in Istanbul.
Precisely. Marnus Visser.
No. It was Demetrius I saw. Demetrius.
No, Mr. Latimer, it was Marnus Visser after Demetrius had killed him. Demetrius himself, I'm delighted to say, is still very much alive and in excellent health. Now, how would you like your coffee?
I knew, as much by instinct as by reason, that Mr. Peters had told me the truth. The implications of what he'd said were so horrendous, however, that all I could do was sit there and gape.
Tell me, Mr. Latimer, how did the Turkish police identify the body?
I'm sorry?
The body, Mr. Latimer, how did they identify it?
There was a French identity card sewn into the clothing.
Was there indeed? That's almost amusing. I could get you a dozen such cards, all in the name of Demetrius Macropoulos, for little more than a few francs.
If Demetrius is still alive, then where is he?
Here in Paris. I saw him just the other day.
What?
Don't look so worried. I made sure he didn't see me. You haven't touched your coffee.
Never mind my coffee. I want to know how Manus Visser ended up dead instead of Demetrius.
Of course you do. And as you've been so very patient, I shall tell you.
He took a cigarette from the box and lit it.
Prison affects men in different ways. After I was released, I purged my heart of malice and went abroad. Visser would have done well to follow my example, but he was hell-bent on revenge.
Yes, you said.
He eventually found Demetrius living in a large house under an assumed name. Demetrius had cured himself of his drug addiction by then and become a man of some wealth and influence. I think Visser intended to kill him at first, but his greed got the better of him, and he turned to extortion instead.
How do you know all this? Did Visser tell you?
Yes, Mr. Latimer. The Great One contrived for us to meet quite by chance in a restaurant. When I heard how much Demetrius was paying him to keep quiet, I admit it surprised me. And then I started to think.
Oh?
If Demetrius was willing to pay so much to a man who knew so little, how much more would he pay to a man who knew it all? That's when I decided to find out more about him.
And that's what brought you to the Athens Records Bureau at the same time as me?
Precisely. It was in Athens that I read about the so-called murder of Demetrius. I knew it wasn't him they dragged from the Bosphorus, though. Visser had written to me a few weeks earlier, boasting that Demetrius had invited him on an Aegean cruise, and I'd realized at once what was planned.
Demetrius must have killed him, hidden the identity card inside his clothing and thrown him overboard.
I take it the Turkish authorities still wanted Demetrius in connection with some crime or other.
Yes. The murder of an old moneylender named Sholem.
You see how economical he was? In one fell swoop, he rid himself of a dangerous enemy and closed the book on one of his past misdemeanors.
Poor Visser. I almost feel sorry for him.
So do I. But we mustn't be sentimental, must we? After all, his death has provided us with a useful opportunity. Shall we go for a walk, Mr. Latimer? Oh, I especially like the Seine by moonlight.
By the time we reached the Pont Neuf, the cold night air had cleared my head. Mr. Peters stood looking down at the water, apparently lost in thought.
It must be a terrible thing to drown. I only hope that Visser was dead before he was thrown in the Bosphorus. He wasn't a good man, but I shouldn't like to think that he suffered at the last.
I thought we'd agreed not to be sentimental. You still haven't told me the details of your plan.
Come along now, isn't it obvious? You know and can prove that the man buried in Istanbul isn't Demetrius. I, on the other hand, know what he's calling himself nowadays and where he can be found. Together, we can make him pay handsomely to keep what we know to ourselves.
Just a minute. Surely you're not suggesting we blackmail him? Not after what happened to Visser.
Visser was greedy. That was his downfall. We shall be more circumspect. Demetrius won't be prepared for that.
Oh?
We shall simply ask him for 1,000,000 francs. He'll pay up thinking he can kill us when we come back for more. But we shan't come back for more. We shall rest content with 500,000 each and quietly disappear.
I don't understand why you need to involve me, though. Couldn't you simply blackmail him on your own?
Demetrius knows nothing about you, Mr. Latimer, and that makes you dangerous. He will have to pay or run an unknown risk.
Peters reached into his overcoat and took out a single sheet of paper.
I have taken the liberty of preparing a letter for him. Perhaps you'd be kind enough to offer your professional opinion?
I took the letter and read it under one of the lamps that line the Pont Neuf. Its tone was gratifyingly similar to a blackmail note I'd once written in one of my novels.
Well, Mr. Latimer, what do you think?
I think, Mr. Peters, that I'd be well advised to go to the police and tell them what I know.
Which is what? That a criminal from a faraway land isn't as dead as everyone thinks. They'd want to know what he's taken to calling himself and where they might find him.
He was, of course, right. There was nothing I could do to bring Demetrius to justice. I could either pack my bags and go home, or stay and see things through to the end. The former was unthinkable, so that left the latter.
It's getting cold. Have you made a decision?
Yes. I'll do what you want, but I have some conditions.
I hope it's not about the money. $500,000 is generous.
Too generous. I don't want a penny of it.
Huh?
My first condition is that you keep it all for yourself. I have no objection to blackmailing a man if that man is Demetrius, but I prefer not to share in the profits.
I see. And your second condition?
You won't find it any more onerous than the first. I want to know what sort of racket Demetrius is involved in nowadays.
The most lucrative of all. Banking.
You mean...
Precisely. He's currently a director of the Eurasian Credit Trust.
I arranged to meet Mr. Peters at the Café Haussmann in 2 days' time. He was already there when I arrived, a raspberry liqueur in front of him and a suitcase at his side.
Good evening, Mr. Latimer. I trust you're keeping well. You look a trifle pale.
I wasn't surprised. I'd barely slept during the last 48 hours.
I'll finish my liqueur and then we'll be off.
Did you send Demetrius that letter?
Of course. I told him to meet us tonight at a hotel near the Leroy Rollin Metro.
I felt my stomach lurch unpleasantly at the thought and asked Mr. Peters what he had in his suitcase.
Old newspapers. It doesn't do to arrive at a hotel without luggage. Well, shall we go?
He wiped his lips on a napkin and hauled himself to his feet.
We'll get there by taxi, but return on the metro.
Why on the metro?
You'll see.
The hotel Mr. Peters had chosen was small and dirty. An unshaven man in shirt sleeves came out when we arrived, chewing a mouthful of food.
I telephoned earlier for a room.
Monsieur Peterson?
Yes.
It's a large room. 15 francs for one, 20 for two.
This gentleman is not staying with me.
15 francs then. Room 6. Here's the key.
Thank you. A friend of mine will be calling here soon. Ask him to come up when he arrives.
Mr. Peters unlocked the door and ushered me in.
Rather nice in its way, and delightfully cheap. He's due in 20 minutes. We'd better make ourselves comfortable.
I don't think I'll ever feel comfortable again. What's to stop him coming in here and shooting us dead?
Really, Mr. Latimer, you've seen too many gangster films. He's far too cautious to murder in public.
I expect that's what Visser thought.
If you're nervous, we'll give you a pseudonym. How about Mr. Smith? That's a good English name. Do you wear spectacles?
Only for reading.
Put them on. And turn up the collar of your coat. If you go and sit in the corner where it's dark, Demetrius won't be able to see your face.
Do you think he'll come?
As long as he got our letter, I'm certain of it.
We fell silent. In the semi-darkness, I could hear the beating of my heart. Mr. Peters checked his watch.
10 minutes to go.
I tried to pass the time, as best I could, by counting the red squared patterns of the wallpaper. The sound of someone walking about in the room upstairs seemed to intensify the silence.
5 minutes.
Then, so suddenly that it seemed as loud as a pistol shot, one of the stairs outside the door creaked.
He's here.
There was a soft knock. Mr. Peters went to the door and opened it. He stared for a moment into the shadows of the landing. Then he stood back, and Demetrius came in.
Good evening, Peterson.
I'm not quite sure what I'd been expecting. A man who somehow exuded corruption, perhaps. But with his dark, neat clothes, his slim, erect figure, and his sleek, grey hair, He could not have looked more respectable.
Aren't you going to introduce me to your friend? I don't think we've met.
This is Mr. Smith, Demetrius.
The gentleman you mentioned in your letter. I understand you knew Manus Visser, monsieur.
I saw Manus Visser.
That's what we're here to discuss.
Be quick about it, then. I have an appointment.
You haven't changed. You're still impetuous, still unkind.
And you still talk too much. Tell me what you want.
Very well, then. As you insist on getting straight down to business, we want money.
Naturally. And what do I get in return?
Our silence. It's very valuable.
How valuable?
By my reckoning, it's worth at least 1,000,000 francs.
And I'm going to pay you that for it, am I?
Yes, Demetrius, you are. Otherwise, we might have to tell the police that a highly respected director of the Eurasian Credit Trust once made his living from trafficking drugs.
Is that the best you can do? My God, you're childish.
No doubt I am. You always were inclined to mock my simple approach to life's problems.
There was a look of viciousness on Mr. Peter's face that I'd never seen there before.
Perhaps we might also contact the authorities in Yugoslavia. I'm sure they'd be interested in the whereabouts of Demetrius Talat.
So you've been talking to Grodek too, have you? Not a sou for that either, my friend. What else do you have?
Athens, 1922. Does that mean anything to you? The name was Talardis, if you remember, and the charge was robbery and attempted murder. You see how thorough we've been?
Demetrius stared straight ahead, expressionless.
Mr. Smith has already told you that he saw poor Visser. It was in a mortuary in Istanbul. He's very friendly with the Turkish police, and they showed him the body.
Still, Demetrius didn't move.
Think how surprised they'd be to learn that the murderer of Sholem, the moneylender, is still alive and not mouldering in his grave, as they thought.
The murderer of Sholem was hanged.
Was he? Surely that can't be right. Can it, Mr. Smith?
No. A man named Dries Mohammed was hanged for the crime, but he made a confession implicating Monsieur Macropolis. A warrant was issued for his arrest and is, I believe, still active.
No doubt the authorities in Athens would also like to know that you're still alive, Demetrius, and those in Sofia. Does 1,000,000 still seem too much?
I'm wondering why you don't want more.
Well, we may come back again from time to time, but don't worry. You'll not find us greedy.
I hope not. It wouldn't be wise to make me desperate.
You're to give us the 1,000,000 tomorrow in 1,000-franc notes.
So soon?
You'll receive written instructions on how to pay in the Morning Post. If you deviate from them in any way, you won't be given a second chance. Do you understand?
Perfectly.
The words were spoken levelly enough, but as Demetrius moved to the door, a thought seemed to occur to him.
Tell me, Mr. Smith, how was this man you took for Visser dressed?
In a cheap serge suit. A French identity card was sewn into the lining of his overcoat.
And how was he killed?
He'd been stabbed in the stomach and thrown into the sea.
Are you satisfied, Demetrius? Good. You will receive your instructions in the morning.
Demetrius left without another word. Mr. Peters shut the door behind him, waited a moment or two, then gently opened it again and looked out into the hallway.
He's gone. What did you make of him?
I'm not sure. But I hadn't realized you hated him so much.
I hadn't realized it myself. I didn't like him, of course. I didn't trust him. After the way he betrayed us all, that's hardly surprising. But it wasn't until he stepped into this room that something became clear to me.
What?
I hated him quite enough to kill him.
We went downstairs a few minutes later and out into the street.
May I ask you a question, Mr. Latimer? Was it the thought that I might betray you to Demetrius that made you refuse your half of the money?
No, of course not.
Good. I shouldn't like to think you thought so little of me. We're almost at the metro.
Why the metro? You still haven't explained.
Haven't you noticed? We're being followed. No, don't turn round. A young man in a grey hat. I knew Demetrius would try something of the sort.
What are we going to do?
Down the steps to the metro. That's it. Walk as quickly as you can, but don't run. And make sure you stay close to me.
Mr. Peters bought us 2 second-class tickets, and we hurried on down the tunnel towards the trains. When we reached the point where it split in two, we stopped.
It would be wise if we appeared to be about to take leave of one another. You see, our pursuer stopped too. He's not sure what's going to happen. Talk to me, please, Mr. Latimer.
Talk.
But not too loudly. I want to listen.
Listen to what?
The trains! I spent half an hour here listening to them this morning.
What on earth for? I don't see...
There's one coming. Quickly, Mr. Latimer. The right-hand tunnel.
The train had already pulled into the platform when we arrived, and we leapt on board.
Oh, yes. You see, Mr. Latimer, if you want to lose a man, you can't do better than the Paris Metro.
But we weren't safe yet. We could see the young man in the hat running down the tunnel towards us. Slowly, oh, so slowly, the automatic door began to close. He was almost upon us when it shut in his face.
No! No!
As the train began to move, I looked back and saw him standing on the platform, shaking his fists at us in impotent rage.
And that, my dear Mr. Latimer, is what I believe you English call a very close shave.
We changed trains several times and finally got out at Saint-Placide. As we walked down the Rue de Rennes, I asked Mr. Peters when he'd be writing Demetrius his letter of instruction. He smiled at me and tapped his pocket.
It's already written. The money is to be collected at the junction of the Avenue de la Reine and the Boulevard Jean Jaurès at 11 o'clock tomorrow night. I suppose you'll already have left Paris by then.
I don't know. I haven't decided.
I shall be sorry to say goodbye to you. Are you sure you won't take even 1,000 francs for your expenses?
Perfectly sure, thank you.
No, of course not. But how about a glass of wine?
I'm sorry?
I've been thinking. You shouldn't rush home without seeing our collaboration through to its climax. Why not come with me tomorrow night to collect the money? Then we can drink a toast afterwards to our success.
You want me to stay in Paris, then?
Why not? You deserve the satisfaction of seeing that swine Demetrius squeezed of a little blood.
Are you sure you don't want to keep me here in case he calls your bluff?
Really, Mr. Latimer? How can you think of such a thing?
All right. I'll stay. But the wine we drink afterwards must be champagne. Oh. And a vintage cuvée at that. It will cost you at least 100 francs.
Mr. Peter's eyes opened wide at the thought of such expense. But he managed a brave smile.
You shall have it, Mr. Latimer. You shall have it.
At 10:45 the following evening, we took up our positions at the corner of the Avenue de la Reine. Mr. Peters had sent a hired car to pick up a messenger from Demetrius, and we were eagerly awaiting its arrival.
I told the driver to make sure he wasn't followed, so he won't have taken the most direct route. He should be here soon, though.
I hope so. It's starting to rain.
Look, Mr. Latimer. The car.
A large Renault drew slowly to a halt, the rain glistening brightly in the beams of its headlights.
Stay here, will you, please? I shan't be a moment.
He walked towards the car, opened the rear door, and leaned in. When he straightened up again, he was holding a paper-wrapped parcel the size of a book.
Thank you very much. Wait a moment, please.
He walked back and asked me to strike a match. In its dim, flickering light, he tore away a corner of the paper, exposing a thick wad of 1,000-franc notes.
Beautiful.
He raised his hand, and the Renault swung in a wide circle and splashed away on its return journey.
The messenger was a woman, and rather a pretty one too, but I'd rather have my 1,000,000 francs.
Are you going to count it now?
I shall reserve that pleasure for the comfort of my own home. A taxi, I think, and then a glass of your favourite champagne. All in all, I'd say we'd earned it.
As soon as we arrived back at his apartment, Mr. Peters threw his overcoat onto one of the leather ottomans and tore open the package. With loving care, he extracted the notes from their wrappings and held them up.
1,000,000 francs. Have you ever seen so much money in one place?
What will you do with it all?
Oh, a little trip to South America, perhaps. I haven't decided. But we must have our champagne. You'll find it cooling in a bowl of water on the sideboard.
Still holding the money, he went behind me towards the curtained-off part of the room.
I'll fetch us some glasses.
I went over to the champagne. Mr. Peter's generosity had only extended to a half bottle, but I wasn't surprised. I was trying to open it when I heard him gasp, and when I turned round, my blood ran cold.
Good evening, Peterson. Or should I say, Monsieur Caillé?
Demetrius was emerging from a gap in the curtains, a snub-nosed revolver in his hand.
Did you really think I wouldn't know you still owned these houses? You always were inclined to take me for a fool. It was good of you to bring Mr. Smith with you, though. It saved me the bother of having to persuade you to give me his name and address. Drop the money.
No, drop it.
As the wad of notes hit the carpet, Mr. Peters seemed to realize what was about to happen and his face grew pale.
No, Demetrius, you mustn't.
He staggered and fell onto his knees, blood pouring from his neck.
And now, my friend, for you.
Before he could fire, I jumped forward. My foot caught on one of the thick Moroccan rugs and I stumbled. The bullet flew harmlessly over my head.
Damn you!
I leapt at him, knocking the gun from his hand. We struggled. He pushed me off. I threw a chair. It hit his shoulder. We went for the gun. I got there first. And trying not to tremble, I picked it up and aimed it.
All right. All right. Enough.
He was suddenly very calm and watchful.
What are you going to do?
If you try to move, I'll shoot you.
Really? Think about it, my friend. If you shoot me, you'll only get Peterson's 1,000,000 francs. If you let me go, I'll give you another 1,000,000 as well.
Be quiet.
2,000,000, my friend.
I said be quiet.
Quickly. My overcoat. The pistol.
Leaving a trail of blood behind him, Mr. Peters had crawled towards one of the leather ottomans and was leaning against it with his eyes half closed.
I'll cover him. You get the police.
No! Don't be a fool!
The police will be here soon. Someone must have heard the shots.
Won't find us. Get police now!
If you leave me here with him, he'll kill me. You know that, don't you? Be sensible and take my offer.
Ignoring him, I reached into the overcoat on the ottoman and gave Mr. Peters his pistol.
5,000,000, then! Is that enough? Or do you want this carrion to kill me?
Don't worry, Peters. I shan't be long. Don't shoot unless you have to.
I paused at the door and turned to look at him.
Oh, it's funny, isn't it? But you're always defeated by stupidity in the end. Sometimes it's your own, sometimes it's other people's, but it always ends the same way.
I was no more than halfway down the stairs when I heard the shots ring out. There were two of them, followed a little later by a third. Heedless of my own safety, I turned and ran back to the room. Curiously, the fear uppermost in my mind was for Mr. Peters.
What is it? What's happened?
Came back. How kind.
He was barely breathing, but his fingers were still wrapped around the butt of his pistol. The bullets he'd fired had all found their mark. Two had struck Demetrius in the chest. The third had hit him between the eyes, almost taking off the top of his head.
Go now, before the police.
You're injured. You need help.
Beyond help. Please. You go.
I tried to think of something to say, some words of comfort to offer, but it was too late. The Great One had summoned him home. I took his advice and left before the police arrived. It would have been too hard to explain my presence.
Your cognac, monsieur?
As I sat in a cafe in the Rue de Rennes, I wondered what they'd make of it all. I'd wiped my fingerprints from the revolver that had belonged to Demetrius and placed it in his hand. With no reason to suspect the involvement of a third party, they would no doubt conclude that two criminals had shot each other in a squalid dispute over money. I, alone, would know the truth. The thought of having to keep such knowledge to myself suddenly felt like a terrible burden, and I knew I'd have to share it with someone. But who could I tell? To that question, at least, I had an answer.
So, Mr. Latimer, your quest is over at last. I admire you for pursuing it so doggedly.
I thanked him for the compliment. Marokakis had impressed me greatly during my first visit to Sofia, and sitting in the office of the newspaper where he worked,
I felt glad that I'd come back to see him.
It's a pity, though, that it all had to end in violence.
At least I have the satisfaction of knowing that Demetrius is finally dead. He was evil, you know, Marakakis. Completely evil.
No doubt he was. But I'm afraid such concepts have become old-fashioned. All anyone cares about now is profit and loss and the stock exchange handbook. Another politician was assassinated in Bulgaria last week.
Oh?
The government has blamed the Serbs and promised to spend more on defense. But the assassin wasn't a Serb. He worked for the Eurasian Credit Trust.
No.
They're heavily invested in the armaments trade, and thanks to him, will do rather well.
They found themselves a new Demetrius, then?
Yes, a new Demetrius. A new mask to hide behind. One man falls, another rises. But always and forever, the game goes on.
As my train left Sofia, I began working on the plot of a new novel. I had wondered at first if I could return to writing cozy detective stories after being exposed to all the ugliness and brutality of the real world. But then I'd realized that it was the only way to escape it. An English village in high summer. An old lady murdered for her savings. An amateur sleuth and a handful of suspects. That was the sort of thing people wanted to read about. That was the sort of thing I wanted to read about myself. And the real world? The real world could go hang.
The Mask of Demetrius by Eric Ambler was dramatized by Stephen Sheridan with original music by Neil Brand. Latimer was Jamie Glover. Demetrius, Tim McInerney. Mr. Peters, Desmond Barrett. Grodek, David Horovitch. Walter Bulich, Richard O'Callaghan. Anna Bulich, Rachel Atkins. And Marukakis, Richard Attlee. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The Mask of Demetrius was a peer production for BBC Radio 4, directed by David Blount.
The news is next here on Radio 4, and then we'll hear some of the strange things people say in bookshops. That's in Open Book in a couple of minutes. But first, a preview of next week's classic serial.
I would die for him, gladly. Perhaps someday I shall.
A young man pledges allegiance to his emperor and king as a rich empire slides into decline.
Almost everybody in Vienna on that feast of Corpus Christi failed to hear the sinister wing beats of the vultures circling overhead.
Joseph Roth's celebrated tale about the end years of the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
My advice to you is get out of the army altogether. Go home, Trotha.
The Radetzky March, next Sunday afternoon at 3:00.